Welcome everyone to episode 205 of the Reds Unrestricted podcast. I'm your host David Comerford and I'm joined by Jamie Barton as we discuss the race for the Player of the Year award.
This podcast is part of the Big Heads Media Podcast Network. Go to bigheadsmedia.com for more great podcasts.
So it's the international break and much like last week, we're going to be doing something a little bit different. Liverpool almost back in action, but still gives us a chance to kind of pause from the breathless schedule and take a look at the season more generally. And it's going to be a particularly competitive race for that Player of the Year award this season. It's going to be somebody from Man City, Liverpool or Arsenal. There's probably a 90%+ chance that that's the case. Those are the three teams who, with 10 games to go, have been the best in the league by far. They're the three contenders for the title. Ollie Watkins is probably the one from outside those teams you'd look at and say maybe he deserves a chance. But certainly when you look at the odds, the top six all come from those three teams that I mentioned. So in order, in terms of the favourites, it's Rodri from Man City, followed by Phil Foden, Arsenal's Declan Rice. Erling Haaland obviously broke the record for top scorer last season. And then you got the two Liverpool players, which is Virgil van Dijk fifth and Mohamed Salah sixth. So what we're going to do today is we're going to talk about who should be in the discussion from the Liverpool standpoint, who we're kind of putting forward as Liverpool's leader, if you like, and then how they compare to the Manchester City and Arsenal quartet that I've just mentioned. So, Jamie, I'll start by asking you if anyone else from Liverpool should be ahead of Van Dijk. We know that he's sort of the favourite from our squad, if you like. Obviously, the main one that stands out is Salah. He won the club's Player of the Month award for three straight months from September to November. And even though he's only played 22 games this season, his tally of 15 goals ranks him third in the league, only behind Haaland on 18 and Watkins on 16. And Watkins, Gross and Trippier, who all have 10, are the only players with more assists than Salah's 9. So the numbers are very good for him as well. So of those two, which one has the edge in the discussion for you?
I would still go for Van Dijk. Salah had a fantastic start to the season, but I do wonder whether just the amount of time that he's been out injured, which didn't feel like particularly long in terms of kind of days and weeks, but there are a lot of games that he missed in that stretch. And regardless of how well he was doing at the beginning of the season, and the stats tell the whole story there, I do wonder whether at this crucial period where people are really beginning to think about these sorts of honours like we are now, whether that injury maybe just came at exactly the wrong time for him in terms of being included in those discussions. So Virgil has been pretty much ever present. He might be among the only players in the squad to have been close to ever present in certainly in our league 11s this season. And so performing at probably similar levels, but I just do think that the kind of the consistency in terms of being able to be selected, I think edges Van Dijk ahead in my opinion.
Yeah, I think that's important in basketball. Obviously, the equivalent of this is the MVP award, and they brought in a rule this season where to be in contention for that award, you needed to play in 65 out of the 82 games in the regular season. And there was a player called Joel Embiid from the Philadelphia 76ers who was the favourite to win that. And then he tore his meniscus, I think in January maybe, and he's been out since. So he's not going to have played enough games. And that's caused quite a lot of controversy. But I do think, and we'll come on to maybe the criteria a little bit more later, but I do think that sort of volume of games and playing in sort of at least 75% of your team's matches should be something that is important in this discussion. And with Salah, I mean, the numbers, the rate at which he's getting the goal involvement, so only Watkins has more in the Premier League, despite the length of that absence, something we're not used to in his case. I mean, it's a very strong argument that you can make for him still. But I just think, like you say, Jamie, just in terms of how much of the season he did miss, which was a surprise, obviously, it does maybe just bump him down a little bit. Just before we move on, to Van Dijk and focus on him in a bit more detail. I mean, are we saying that those two are the ones who are really out on their own in the Liverpool squad at the moment? Obviously, it's been a brilliant collective effort, but with so many injuries around the team, it's felt like some of the other big names who might be in that conversation just haven't really been able to build their own case.
Yeah, I think that's exactly right. I mean, if you'd been having this conversation in January or something like that, I think Alisson would have had to feature. I think he's had he's so far had a tremendous season. But again, injuries, I don't think he could miss as big a chunk as he has and still probably will, and still be in that conversation. I don't quite know the stats on how many games Keller has played recently, but it's a good chunk of the league season. And big games as well. I think big games make a big difference. And so Alisson's last game is a big game. It's the one where he makes the mistake with Van Dijk at Arsenal. But when you think of this stretch of the season, which is so crucial and has, even though we're not right now, ultimately led to us being top of the league for quite a lot of the time, you think of Kelleher in goal. And so I think that rules out Alisson. The same could possibly be said for Trent. I don't think he's been kind of as sparkling as Salah and Ali were earlier in the season, but he's been excellent again. Feels like an age that now that he's been playing in that hybrid kind of midfield role, but it hasn't really been that long, in all honesty. It started with, 11 games to go last season. So we've seen it probably for about a year now. But again, any claims that he might have to that are kind of ruled out by the amount of time that he's spent out. There's shouts elsewhere for someone maybe like Alexis McAllister, or maybe Darwin Nunez, but each of those have probably enjoyed kind of spells in the team where they haven't been at their best, in a way that whenever Van Dijk and Salah have been available, that they have been consistently excellent. And so to me, they stand kind of head and shoulders above the rest.
Yeah, I think I was going to mention McAllister, because I think the level he's been playing at probably since he came back from the injury that he had just before Christmas has been sort of player of the year, certainly worthy of being in the conversation. And I think Trent as well, towards the back end of last year, you know, when he scored that goal against Fulham, that winner, that form then was very much up there as well. But in terms of doing that for the whole season, and obviously fitness is part of that in Trent's case, certainly, it is sort of Van Dijk and Salah, really. So let's move on to Van Dijk then. I mean, I'm just going to rattle off some stats here, Jamie, before I throw it back to you. He's got the best aerial duel success rate in Europe's big five leagues, 84.3%. He's only been dribbled past twice all season. Actually missed when he sort of lost the streak that he had. But according to SofaScore, it's twice, which is the joint best record alongside Saliba and Ezri Konsa. That's among those 20 games played. And he's won 78% of his duels overall, which is second, again, behind Konsa. So maybe he should be the one they're actually talking about. But it's, you know, 0.2% difference talking about there. Van Dijk is Liverpool's most recent player of the month. And as we've alluded to, he's had to play in a defence that's been pretty much ravaged by injury. Trent has missed 21 games now, Konate 9. Matip's season ended in December. Robertson's missed 24. Obviously, he's had a fresh scare with Scotland on his ankle. And in reference to what you were saying, Jamie, Alisson's actually missed 22 games, which caught me by surprise. And it means that if Kelleher plays the next two matches, he will actually have played as many games this season as Alisson has, which, again, really shocked me, but shows that Van Dijk, there's been extra onus on him at the back to kind of keep things together. So with all that in mind, and, you know, we are going to talk about some of his rivals later, do you see Van Dijk as the player of the year at the moment? Because I'm pretty sure he won it in 2018-19, when Liverpool very nearly won the title. So do you think he should be winning it again?
He's certainly up there. Yeah, I mean, you read off all the players who've been out, and he has been the kind of rock at the back of a team that is very much fighting for the Premier League title. There's not many players, I think, who could have held it together in the way that he has. As you say, we'll get on to talk about rivals, but the narrative of the season is so important. When these awards are decided. It's interesting you say that he actually won it the year that we didn't win the league in 18-19, because I think normally what happens is whoever is kind of looking most likely to win the league, it will be their kind of defining player who wins the award. So let's say everything goes fantastically. City and Arsenal draw, we beat Brighton, maybe they drop a couple points in the next few and we win, I think, three of our next four are at home. We could be looking at a situation where you'd say, yes, absolutely, Van Dijk is the player of the season. At the moment, it's very difficult to know, but you have to say he's up there. We're, as you say, we'll get on to talk about the rest of them soon, but very, very few players in the history of the Premier League could have held together a side in the, like we've seen in the last few weeks and months, has just been absolutely kind of, the narrative is injuries and he has held everything together. It would be, there are a lot of good players in the Premier League this season, but it would be difficult, I think, to rule him out, sure.
Just looking there while you're talking, I mean, I mentioned that he won it in 18-19. At the players who've won it twice since the award was founded in 1974, you've got Mark Hughes, who won it twice, Alan Shearer, Thierry Henry, Cristiano Ronaldo, Gareth Bale, De Bruyne, and then Salah. So, I mean, that's the kind of company we're talking about here in terms of how hard it is to win it twice, I mean, let alone once. And obviously no one's ever done it three times. So that would be a pretty unique achievement. Van Dijk's obviously had a couple of rough moments this season. He managed to get his ban extended for that red card against Newcastle. I personally thought at the time that that was a red card and that the whole fuss about it was overblown, and that it wasn't the best start for a captain to be sort of mouthing off in the referee's ear and then having his ban extended. And then, obviously, more recently than that, you've got the mistake he made against Arsenal. Obviously, Alisson partly culpable for that as well. So it hasn't been sort of perfect, but I suppose you could say that for all the players in this list. I mean, Rodri, the one we're going to talk about next, managed to get himself a three-game ban for doing something stupid against Nottingham Forest. So everyone's got sort of the marks against them. That's probably what it would be. Van Dijk, can't recall too many sort of big mistakes that he's made aside from that, but obviously the Arsenal game could be one that has a big bearing on the title as well. So just before we move on to all those other players, Jamie, what do you see as sort of the criteria for this award? Because I feel like a discussion we might have had on this podcast before, but it's an individual prize. But you said, you know, before, it's often who wins the league. It's often what the narrative is, and things like that. So what for you are, or maybe more accurately should be, the things that define who wins this? Because it's obviously very hard to pick out kind of the outstanding player when it, you know, you've got 11 and then a whole squad really who are contributing to a title win or a successful season.
I think what the criteria are and what they should be are probably slightly different things. I think what they are is kind of what I touched on, that narrative, that sense that someone is representative of a team. And I think there should be an element of that for sure. I think it's difficult to say what they should be, because it, as you say, it's a team sport and it's often hard to isolate who is having what effect on what moments. I think being a captain will probably help him. I think that stands in his favour. To say what the criteria should be, I think there could be potentially a heavier emphasis on stats. I have to admit that I don't know the relevant stats at this moment, or don't have them in front of me in terms of kind of clean sheets and that. I think moments, big moments, is crucial, and I think should be crucial as well. You think back to Virgil, and yes, it's in the League Cup. That's just the one that I'm pulling off the top of my head, but there's the League Cup win. I'm sure there'll be lots of moments in the league that you can think of. There's the Haaland, when he goes through at Anfield and Van Dijk shows him down the line. I think these are things that if Gary Neville's talking about it, then suddenly it's in the kind of the consciousness of the football, the kind of Premier League world. And I think that is important. It's difficult to say what else I think the criteria should be, but frankly, he's going to tick every box that we talk about. So yeah, I do think that those kind of defining moments is maybe one of the biggest, and probably should be one of the biggest kind of factors in terms of determining that.
I think with this award, in particular, it was all about the PFA. One thing I like about it is that obviously it's always enforced by the players, first of all. So you'd like to think that, you know, it's almost got added authenticity about it because, you know, it's not necessarily the media from the outside. It's those who've actually faced, you know, the players that they're voting for in these conversations or played alongside them, as the case may be. And that gives them obviously an added understanding that we simply can't have from the outside. And there is sort of an extra prestige attached to it because of that, as opposed to something like the Ballon d'Or, where it's much more of like an amalgamation of different people voting for it. And I think sometimes that is narrative driven. I mean, you had, I think obviously Messi won it last year and now he's playing in America. He's not really sort of done it at league level whatsoever. And that is, you can sort of predict quite clearly who's going to win an award like that because it is about us who captures the imagination. But the one problem I didn't have with Messi winning it was that obviously the World Cup, the biggest stage, the performance he delivered then. And I do think there is definitely something to be said, like you alluded to, Jamie, about those big moments because the amount of pressure that players feel, the impact that has on sort of the course of football history, that, you know, they're all worth one goal, but those moments deserve a bit of extra stock to be placed in them, I think. And obviously in a league season, there isn't necessarily like a final like there is in a World Cup, for example, but there are still sort of, you know, you mentioned the Haaland one there, and then on the flip side, you could have the one counting against Van Dijk against Arsenal as well. There are those big moments still which you can factor in. And I do think, you know, for the most part, looking back over the years, I'd say the players have broadly got it right, which sounds like a stupid thing to say because, you know, who are we to question what the players think from the outside? But, I mean, you had, obviously, Haaland last year. That was basically a foregone conclusion. Salah the year before, his numbers were amazing, even though Liverpool didn't win the title. De Bruyne, I think, won it two previous seasons before that. No one would ever begrudge it to him. He's probably the best player in the Premier League, or certainly up there. Van Dijk, when he won it, was probably worthy of that title. I think De Bruyne spent quite a bit of that time that season out injured as well. Salah, when he broke the record, Kante, Mahrez, when Leicester won the league, Hazard, Suarez. I mean, all these players, I think very few people outside the realms of like the corners of football Twitter would have had too many qualms with that. I mean, the one that I think back to is when Giggs won it in 2009. Pretty sure he started 12 games or something like that. And it was basically just he hasn't won one. He's seen as this legendary figure in the league. Let's make sure he wins one. So sometimes things like that come into it. But I think for the most part, it hasn't been as controversial as something like the Ballon d'Or would be. But the unique thing about this season is that, especially with those three teams being so close, there isn't someone who's like out on their own ahead. There isn't a Haaland scoring however many goals. There isn't a Virgil van Dijk who's, I mean, it's not quite the 18-19 version this season. There isn't like a superhuman defender in sort of the best defence in the league or anything like that. So I think that is why this year's race, and especially given the standards that we're seeing, is probably the most interesting that I can remember. And with that in mind, let's move on to some of the rivals that Van Dijk faces. So we'll start with Man City, Jamie. I'll throw sort of all three players at you and then you just kind of take us through them one at a time and what your perspective on their contribution is. So Rodri, the big narrative with him, if we're going to talk about the narrative again, is that City are unbeaten in the 25 games he's played and they lost all three of the games that they had to play without him. So sort of most important player on potentially title-winning team. Phil Foden, 11 goals, 10 assists, 7th in the league for goal involvement, scored some big goals as well, probably having his most prolific season, and it feels like he's the one who sort of stepped forward in the manner that Gundogan or Haaland, De Bruyne, players like that have done so in the past. Haaland as well, I mean, we mentioned him. Not quite the same amount of hype this season because he isn't scoring at the same utterly ridiculous rate. But it's still 18 and 23, 15 of those from open play, 5 assists as well. One thing possibly against him is that he's actually underperformed his XG by nearly 3 and has missed 26 big chances, which is 4 more than anybody else. So maybe not at his absolute best, but he's still a top scorer in the league. So, I mean, how do you see those three then, Jamie, before we move on to Arsenal?
I think, to me, Rodri is kind of the boring one, but probably the correct one and in my opinion the most likely one. I think it's interesting you touched on his suspension. I think that almost helps him in the race for his own individual honours, because they as you say, they lost all three games without him. That is kind of astounding when you think of the record that City have. I don't know how many games they've lost this season, but I doubt it's more than five or six, maybe. So you'd say he's probably been his absence has contributed to half of their losses. I don't have the complete stats, but to me that is the correct one. You can't really say too much more about Rodri, the kind of superlatives that he is. Genuinely a fantastic player, and even at Anfield when we were swarming all over them, the kind of tsunami that Guardiola references, even then he somehow managed to kind of hold it together to some extent. He is, in my opinion, you said De Bruyne is the best player in the league. I disagree. I think Rodri is the best player in the league. I think he could well be the big statement, but I think he might be the best player in the world right now, or has been maybe over the last 12 months. So for me, that's the most obvious, even if it is the most boring. Foden is an interesting one in that you say he's seventh for goal involvements in the league. To me, for an attacking player, which he is, that's not good enough to win player of the season. But look, we spoke about moments and he certainly got them. The obvious one is the Manchester Derby, which he completely turns on its head, and he's a fantastic player, don't get me wrong. So he's got those big moments in him. Which makes me kind of think that maybe even if he's not deserving of it, in my opinion, he might be more likely to get it than some others, including, I think, Erling Haaland. I think, strangely, he's the least likely of the three City players that we mentioned to win it, I think. And a lot of that just comes down to the fact that he won it last season, and there is that narrative that in order to win it two seasons in a row, it has to be kind of spectacular. And anything that was a step down from last season, which it has been, despite the fact that he's still been fantastic, I think makes it unlikely that he would win it again. And we talk about moments. I think he will be remembered, I think, this season for the Man United miss just as much as anything else, just because of how unexpected it was, which shows you his quality. But that was so kind of prevalent in the football discussions that strangely, if I think of Haaland this season, I don't think of a goal instantly. I think of that miss. And maybe that shows up my bias, and I'm sure there's quite a lot of it going on. It's a fantastic player, but I think it's unlikely, given the slight drop off from last season, that he wins it again. So for me, it's Rodri. If it's a City player, it has to be Rodri.
He's the victim of his own success, Haaland, I think, because even last season when he sort of went two, three games without scoring, there was kind of people, there was sort of little murmurings of criticism in the background, things like that. And it's almost when you are such a robotic goal scorer and then you make a mistake, it's sort of a bigger deal. Whereas it's almost come to the point now where Nunez is probably being regarded as having a better season than Haaland, even though I'm sure there's a massive difference between them when it comes to goal scoring. And to be fair, they've both had their own sort of struggles in front of goal. But, you know, I suppose if you were in that sort of City camp, you could say, I mean, 18 and 23 are still a phenomenal strike rate. Foden, I think the numbers don't sound that great. And I think he's one where the numbers look a lot better when you put it in all competitions. But I was just focusing on Premier League for this. And I did sort of tweet, I think, after the Manchester Derby that it does feel like he's the one who's sort of taken the reins for City a bit this season. And I think every time you watch him, he's a player who, from the Liverpool perspective, puts a bit of fear into you in terms of he could be the one to produce the decisive moment. I mean, I think they were losing at Brentford, weren't they? Did he score a hat-trick in that game or something like that to turn it around? So, and then Rodri, I mean, you say best player in the world. Don't know if I agree with that, but at the same time, we're obviously entering a new era now where it's like there is no sort of clear, you know, Messi's not in Europe anymore. Ronaldo's gone. There isn't any outstanding number one. You can make a case for an awful lot of players in that bracket now, which is something that's unfamiliar. And there is nobody in the game who sort of combines, I was going to say midfield, but probably just in the game generally, who combines kind of the on and off ball attributes that he provides and kind of the intelligence within that as well. I just think he's a really unique player. You know, we've got midfielders who are destroyers. We've got midfielders who are brilliant in possession. And we've got quite a few who can do both of those to a solid degree. But I think Rodri is just elite in both categories. And he is, you know, clearly invaluable for Man City. And down all the years, there's been multiple players who've got injured for Man City. And you've thought, is that the one that kind of tips the balance against them? And then they've just been fine. It's been like nothing's ever happened. But I think if Rodri injured, you know, got a muscle injury or missed a few weeks between now and the end of the season, it could take City out of the title race, which is just a thing that you're basically not saying about anybody else. So those are the three from City. The other one from the top six plays for Arsenal, Declan Rice, obviously came in with a massive bar to try and clear. I think the most expensive British player in Premier League history, sort of third maybe all time when you consider Caicedo coming into Chelsea. But he started every single game, third most minutes among midfielders in the league. And he's the only midfielder who has 95% passing accuracy and more than 75 combined tackles and interceptions, which is, again, you know, linking into what you're saying about Rodri in terms of the value that he has on and off the ball. Granted, he isn't someone who can play maybe the defence splitting passes, but he's proven to be very secure and very important in Arsenal's build-up as well. And I think, in a strange way with Rice, the lack of discussion about him, which I might be wrong, but it doesn't feel like there's been huge amounts of fuss over Rice this season, is a good thing, because if he hadn't been at it 100%, he was going to be jumped on for that price tag, whether it's by the media, by fans or whatever. But he's just almost quietly gone about his business and been a vital player in the Arsenal side, and seems to have had a lot of very good performances in big games as well. So where do you see Rice figuring in relative to the players that we've mentioned?
I think there's a lot of smart money on Rice. I really do. I think, look, we'll see. We talk about narrative. We'll see what happens for the rest of the season. Maybe Arsenal will collapse like they did last season, although I don't think they will. But there's a lot of things in his favour for me. As you say, there's the story of him coming in. I think, if I'm correct, that he's the only new signing that we've been talking about, which I think probably does help you. So there's that. There's the English thing. I do think that makes a big difference in terms of who's going to be voting. That's going to be mostly, well, not mostly, but the largest kind of nationality will be English. And I think seemingly we do like to kind of promote our own players. And you talk about the English tax in terms of transfer fees, there's all of that. So I think that really works in his favour. I think moments, again, he ticks that box. You talk about the beginning of the season when Arsenal were not this kind of, I don't want to say juggernaut, but kind of machine that was seemingly churning out wins. They were just off the back of a very, very disappointing end to a very good season, but no one really knew what they were going to be this season. And then they get that win against Manchester United in the last minute that he scores, and didn't seem like they really ever looked back from that. So there are these are moments that people remember and that players remember. So there's a lot, I think, that factors into him. He's the only one from his own team who's kind of being put up, which I think is probably a bit harsh on someone like Bukayo Saka. But if we're looking at the top six, he's the only one who appears. So he's kind of emblematic. If people are going to vote for Arsenal because they feel like Arsenal did well, then he kind of hoovers up all those votes in terms of, whereas if you're voting for City, someone might vote for Rodri, someone might vote for Haaland, someone might vote for Foden. So I think all of that works in his favour, and the simple fact that he has just been excellent. He's been really, really good all season. Surprised me even, to be quite honest. So I think there's a lot of smart money on Declan Rice.
Yeah, to be honest, I'd also say, you know, you mentioned the goal against United, sort of more under the radar, because there wasn't sort of that goal, that assist. In the home game against us, I thought him, and I think Jorginho played that game. Those two in midfield were absolutely brilliant. And there was no sort of getting around that, and they dominated Liverpool in that department of the pitch. So I just think sometimes you look at a player with that kind of price tag and think, you know, is it just because he's English, like you say, is he sort of overhyped, and you watch him and you think you're almost waiting for him to sort of make a mistake to show that he does have these weaknesses. But I just don't really see any major weaknesses in his game. I mean, there's stuff that he doesn't do, but I don't think that's sort of a problem, if that makes sense. I think he's just so good at the type of player that he is, that you don't need to sort of criticise him in any way, to be fair. The one thing on Saka, because he was seventh in the odds, and he's got 13 goals, 8 assists in the Premier League, which are obviously very solid numbers. And I think we'd probably be remiss not to mention him in some way. The only thing that counts against him, I would say, is that from the end of September, when Arsenal won 4-0 at Bournemouth, to let's say the 30th of January, he only scored 2 goals in the Premier League, and that's sort of a big chunk of matches. And that's when there was a lot of discussion about, do Arsenal have enough kind of firepower? And he's been in electric form recently. I mean, 1, 2, 4, 6, 7 goals and an assist in his last 8 games or something like that. I mean, those are obviously crazy numbers and started the season well too. But maybe just, you could say, not being able to do it consistently for the whole season. But again, we've still got a lot of time to go. And we mentioned Arsenal v Liverpool, Arsenal v Man United. Massive game for obviously that narrative at the weekend. It's the last meeting between, sort of, in that like mini league, if you like, between those three teams. And if Arsenal come away with a win and Rice is man of the match, I think he probably shoots to number one in the discussion, much as obviously the City players in there. If Foden scores the winner, he's probably number one. So a lot of this can change. But having said that, let's try and get a ranking in before we finish, of the six that I've mentioned. I'll go first to give you a little bit of time to think on it, Jamie. I was just sort of typing out there as you were talking, and it's really hard to do it. I've gone with Haaland sixth. Despite what I said about his numbers, I think he hasn't played. He obviously missed a little bit of time and hasn't quite been at his best, and maybe should have scored more, which is a mental thing to say. But the XG is there, you know, and the big chances are there as well. I would put Salah fifth, again, limited minutes, but above Haaland because he's got more goal involvement in, I think, probably fewer matches than Haaland's played. So for me, that's pretty clear cut that he should be there. Then I've gone with Foden. Again, I think he has the capacity to jump up by the end of the season. Rice would be third for me. And then Van Dijk second, I would have to Rodri. Just again, because of that, how mad that stat is about Rodri missing those games. And granted, it was his fault. He wasn't injured. He wanted to show City how important he was. Maybe he wants a contract extension or something like that. But yeah, so I would say Rodri just because of his value to City. But it's so tight with Van Dijk because where Liverpool would be without him, with the other injuries they've had in defence. But I just think that, if I'm being extra harsh, that sort of miscommunication against Arsenal is kind of stuck in my mind, but there's still plenty of time to finish the season with hopefully no more mistakes from him, and then try and make his case as strong as possible. But I'd give Rodri the slight edge over Van Dijk at the moment in the interests of not being too sort of biased, I suppose. So just to finish then, Jamie, I'll throw it over to you if you could take me from sort of 6 to 1 of those players.
Just to clarify, is this who I think will win or who I think should win? Because they
should. So your opinion on it, basically. Yeah.
Okay. Yeah. In that case, I think it's going to be very, very similar to yours. So I've gone Haaland in sixth as well. I'm going to do, yeah, just because I think to win it 2 seasons in a row, you have to be better the second season, and he hasn't been. And so I think that just rules him out. And that's maybe harsh, but that's, I think that's fair enough. I think that's how it should work. I've gone Salah in fifth. Again, just missed a big chunk of the season in a crucial part of the season. And I think that pretty much rules him out, and fair enough, to be honest, because you talk about consistency. It's not his fault that he's been out, but he has. And so it's very difficult, to put him forward. I'd gone Foden fourth. So this is, again, I think the same as you. Big moments are crucial, but I can't look at those numbers and see 7th best goal involvement in the league and best player in the league. That doesn't add up to me, so that doesn't make sense. Third is where it gets very, very tricky in terms of what I think. In terms of what I think will happen, and I know this isn't what you asked, but I would say Rice is ahead of Van Dijk. In terms of what I think, and look, it all comes down to the decent chunk of the season that we've got left. But I would probably put Rice in third. I think you said the same. Just because I think he's been fantastic, but he's been settled, if that makes any sense. And he's consistently had the same players alongside him. And look, he's new to the team, so that deserves some credit. But I think Van Dijk has proven that kind of, in terms of individual awards, that he is the kind of crux of the way that we play, in a way that maybe Rice is, but we haven't seen the evidence of it yet, because he's always had, I don't know, a Jorginho next to him, an Odegaard ahead of him, a Saliba behind him. These have all kind of been mainstays, in the way that Van Dijk has not had that kind of that consistency and that he can rely on in terms of selection of players around him. Having said all that, it's probably no surprise that I think Rodri is top ahead of Virgil, just for all the reasons that kind of we've mentioned, that is obvious. And I don't say that someone is the best player in the world without also thinking they're the best player in the Premier League. And so that's my top six.
Yeah, so we both agree on that one. And the one thing I would say in terms of how you split those top three is who's made the biggest impact on winning, basically, of those players, who's made the biggest contribution to their team success this season. And I think, to be honest, that fits for not only the top three, but the whole top six. And I think Rodri, Van Dijk and Rice are all obviously elite in that regard. But I do think, like you mentioned, especially with how settled Arsenal's lineup has been for the most part. I know they'll say, oh, Thomas Partey hasn't played, but, you know, no one's looked at, I don't think I've looked at Arsenal's midfield in these games and thought that it's been a weakness. The thing that's held Arsenal back is the top end of the pitch, as far as I'm concerned. They've got a rock solid defensive record anyway, and they create a lot of chances. So, yeah, I think Rodri and Van Dijk have had a slightly bigger impact in that regard than Rice has, but Rice has still been exceptional. But yeah, we'll leave it there for this podcast. Thanks, Jamie, for jumping on, and thanks very much, everyone, for listening. Before we finish today, just to mention a poll that I've put out on my Twitter account. Basically, we're trying to work out what kind of direction we want to go in with our content for next season. So I've put up a few options of what the type of episodes people want to see. So if you just vote on there in terms of what your favourite sort of content strand would be. We've got statistical deep dives, tactical analysis, transfer target analysis, and debates with rival fans are the options in that. So I'll put that on the episode description, so if you can take a couple of seconds, just go and vote on that, and obviously that can determine what sort of content you listen to from us next season. And yet, closer to the time, we've got Liverpool against Brighton at the weekend, the Premier League title race resuming, so we'll be back with another match reaction episode after that one. So make sure you join us for that. But until then, take care.